Arizona was post 74.
It had to be.
Because the Houston conference was in 71. The first Houston. With the split and people walked out. Hmm. So you met her in Arizona, maybe. And what happened? What was your relationship to her?
No, you know what? You are right, because it was, we were still in college. You're right. Probably it was 70, 71.
We should look for that, or maybe next time we meet, we should go back.
No, absolutely. You know why? Because I was not working for Chicana Center then. I'm wrong. That was attending women's conferences. And that's when I met Francisca. I wasn't working for her then.
Maybe next time we should meet and go through the boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
So, how did you meet? So you met people from across regions. I think that's interesting.
Oh, it was fabulous. It was probably the richest experience in being in the movement was meeting women and Latinos, you know, in Chicago, throughout all the regions. Because,
right.
You know, we tend to think we were only in California.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, you think the struggle is only in the United States. I mean, no, it's a worldwide struggle, but you begin to identify and build really strong allegiances with people all over.
How did you keep in contact with them, or you just saw them at conferences?
Oh, we kept in contact, definitely.
By mail or by newspapers? Or
good question. I don't recollect being by mail. It had to be conferences and meetings in between the conferences, and maybe there was some telephone conversations.
Right.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I don't think there was writings of our relations in between.
So do people know about the newspaper, the Hijas de Cuauhtémoc newspaper? Did you take it to those meetings, or was that even later than this moment?
Later than this. Oh, yeah. See, I've lost track of the time frames, but, you know, I think about it because Hijas was when we were in college. So we've had it taken them with
those
us.
Those papers came out in 71.
Yeah. See, I left in 71.
Right.
The end of, went to D.C.
They came out early 71. So, did you keep in touch with Dorinda?
Dorinda?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, because, like I tell you, we parted ways. There was this parting of, you know, then we became organized and there was different philosophies. And as you know, then you have different splits in the women's group.
What were some of the tensions?
God, you know, they're very, very significant, and I can't remember. They were major because it was really hard on us to go against one another. But if I could generalize, I would say the tension was who was really more authentic feminist than the other.
Not authentic Mexicans now, but authentic feminists.
Yeah, really, like really. Talking about women's issues, the opportunism that took place. Many women, you know, excuse me, stepped on other women's backs to get political positions or promote themselves. And, we had a very idealistic view of the movement as helping our people, helping other women. We really looked down on people helping themselves and promoting themselves. And then really forgetting about the issues. And that's how we saw many of those women.
Mm-hmm.
So generalizing, who's more Latina or who was more feminist, who was really being more opportunistic and looking more out for themselves in the community. And there was actually divisions in how we perceived what was to be done. And there was what was going to be our strategy and who we were going to take on. And there were people who didn't want to take on certain issues or men or institutions, and we didn't have those kind of limits. But they were big. They were big divisions, and unfortunately, then you know we all went off on different roads.
Do you remember? So you do. Do you remember what happened then at Houston when that major split happened in the water?
I know we talked about that, and I don't remember specifically. Just I just know I was with a group that was what I think was a right group, but the group was it was more philosophical. It was a philosophical thing, and I sided with a group that philosophically were the minority, you know, and it was more feminist oriented. It was more.
You're the group that stayed in the conference and didn't walk out. If the walkout was staged by women who thought that it was too radical, too feminist, that the march from Delano was happening, the Vietnam War was happening, men, Latino men were being killed, and that it was selfish.
Oh, yeah. So I was with the other group.
Right. So the women who walked out were actually... And I think that there was some critique of the women who had actually organized the conference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they were affiliated with the YMCA or the YWCA. But they were all women. They were all community women from Houston. And so they were trying to say that the conference was whitewashed. Because
I remember
they
that.
Used those community resources to organize the conference. YMCA or whatever it was.
Yeah, the YWCA.
YWCA.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be something really interesting for me to really look more into that. Because, yeah, it was major. And we stuck together. There was a group of us. I mean, we just really... held together on that.
And you don't remember who walked out?
Okay. Dorinda may have been one of them. That may have been part of that. And I hate to pinpoint her because that's not fair. I really, but yeah, there were really women we had aligned with on a lot of other issues. And
there were a lot of East LA women who walked out. I know that. Mm-hmm. And who wrote about it. That's how I know.
Mm-hmm.
I think one was Susan Racho.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the rest of their names, but something to think about. But. So, do you remember, you told me about when you all started to meet within, on campus, but that was after you had been active in the community with Anna,
mm-hmm.
right? Were there other people, other women who were doing that kind of work?
What kind
from
of
work? Long Beach State on campus community work. Was everybody?
Everybody was.
And so then you came back to organize women on campus, or yourselves on campus?
Yeah. Well, it was like we were...
Simultaneous.
Yeah, it was simultaneous, but the campus was really a meeting point.
Right.
An organizing point, like a center.
Yeah.
But that's not where it was happening to us.
Right.
It was happening off the campus.
So, but do you remember the events that led up to the newspaper being published?
Yes.
Yeah. Or how you guys became a group? Of women affiliated, how you became affiliated? Because it was a very loose group, or it was a very structured group?
Well, we were, you know about Cindy Onesto.
Not a lot about her.
Well, you know, she was very active, and, you know, she's passed away since, but we were very close, and all of us had been involved with the movement all along. Do you know Martha Lopez? Was Senator,
right.
Congressman. Torres is off. We were all very close. We were friends, we were colleagues. So maybe formally we weren't as organized as Metro was, but we met. You know, everything was done like in caucuses all time. I mean, you always had meetings all the time. There was always organized meetings going on. But the Latinas, you know, we were very close. So many of us were roommates, many of us, you know, we're out and protesting in the community together. We fasted together. I mean, so we were always together. And it's almost like this mind frame that just was a continuum of what we did. So we would just meet and talk about, you know, different causes we were involved with. But IJAS, you know, was, I don't remember exactly the major falling out, but I remember when being in the trailer, because it was a Metro trailer.
Right.
And Anna was like the intellectual. Anna was, she's
right.
Way over everybody's head. I mean, mm-hmm. You had to really follow her, you know, to go, wow, you know.
She's heavy.
Yeah, she's heavy. I mean, you know, Anna was heavy. And she also spoke out. And it was like E.F. Hutton, they would listen and they would just ignore her, man. It's like, then someone else would say it. And then I would sit there and a man would say what Anna just said. And they would go, oh, yeah, that's really a great idea. That's heavy. Let's do that. And I started seeing that more and more, and we finally got tired of it. Like, why is it when you say it, Anna, you know, it's not heavy, and when, you know, Fernando says it, it's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And we just really got sick. I mean, it became more and more overt. And then they started slamming us, you know, putting us down in front of the other members. And it just became a degrading, it became degrading toward us, and we fought back. It was really fighting back. I think had they tolerated us more, or let us kind of like, let it air out, you know, it might have not developed, but it was a constant, it was very strong opposition toward us. We fought back. And Anna really was, as I recollect, the one who said, let's do a paper and write about. And she was always pretty much the leader in, let's write about this. Let's express this.
So you were a more informal group until the paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't go by a name? Because it was just a formal group within MedChapel?
Yeah, we were just part of the group, but we did our thing in the group. And outside of the group, in the community, but we always brought back. And NEHA's really, they labeled us that as well, because, and I don't know if it's after the paper or before the paper when they did that burial of us, which really, like, was very traumatic to me. And actually, I know soon thereafter I went to D.C. It was just, it was very devastating. It's like your own family rejecting you.
Can you tell me about it? The burial? What happened?
Well, just that on campus, these guys, there must have been 8 or 10 of them, Armando Vasquez being one of them, and Jose, what's Jose's last name? Velasco. And, I mean, those guys stand out the most because, you know, we're closest to them. But they led it, and they were marching with signs and everything, you know, signs they were burying us, those, like, gravesite signs.
Right. It was
tombstones. Tombstones, and, you know, it was more a joke on us. I mean, they thought it was a joke on us, but they made a big thing about it, and they marched around, and they buried us.
Who was it?
Who did they bury? IJAS. I don't remember our names being on it. Specifically, Anna's or mine or anyone's, but Hijas de Guatemoc were buried.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done very physical. I mean, they marched around the trailer and then they put the tombstones in the ground and gave us our rights. And, you know, it was really like devastating. I mean, it's funny when you look at it now, but it was very devastating, particularly since we were all so close. And I didn't take it as being funny. I took it very seriously. I took it as a threat to my well-being as well, and I had a choice. I could stay and fight it, or leave and move forward, and that's kind of my modus operandi in everything I do. It was going to be taking on so-called the family in a very devastating way, and I chose to leave it and do other things, and that's when I went to D.C. So it was very, very painful, and I understand it got worse after I left. Between the women and the men, it just...
Well, I think around certain women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certain. Oh, yeah. There were certain women. Because there are certain women that went with the men.
Right.
And they became our enemies.
It's ugly.
Oh, it was very ugly. And it was very backstabbing. And
so do you remember how the paper... You don't remember about forming the paper or... How you got the name?
Probably Anna gave the name, but Hijas de Guatemoc. You know, because we really, at that time, were very curious about our own roots and our own beginnings, and we really, I guess, traced it back to, or wanted to trace it and left a trace to the Mexico and the Indians of Mexico, and that's where Guatemoc came, and... Because Malinche and all that, I mean, was really significant to us as a role model. But somehow, it's interesting when you think of it, huh? The daughters of a man.
Right.
An Indian chief. Now, I don't know the history of Guatemoc, why he was picked.
Oh, I do. It's because he's the last emperor who never...
Gave in to the Spanish.
The colonization process, right? He died, never having surrendered, right?
Oh, so that's pretty heavy, huh?
Yeah. So what, how did Malinche figure in?
Oh, we kind of saw ourselves as, you know, possible Malinches, and we really used that story to talk about the struggle of women and how, you know, copying out or buying into the mainstream and looking as, you know, victims of, you know, that whole Spanish conquest or... So we identified with Malinche, but we also, you know, challenged that concept and had our own concept of it.
Right.
As we did of machismo, had our own concept of that. You know, so yeah. We started, you know, interpreting things through our eyes and then talking about it and writing it.
A few people talk about that, the use of language, the, you know, mm-hmm. new interpretations of culture. Can you tell me a little bit about Cindy Onesto? Since I can interview her and
mm-hmm.
her involvement and what you remember of her, and also Martha, because she didn't want to be interviewed.
Yeah. Well, Cindy, they were both very quiet-spoken women.
I mean, the other, because the person I did interview was Leticia.
Mm-hmm.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But Martha didn't want to. I'll ask her again before I finish. But
do you know if Leticia got remarried? Do you know?
Mm-mm. I don't know. We can talk about that.
I was just curious. They were both very quiet women, very soft-spoken women. One was later on, you know, said she was lesbian, came out. The other one, you know, was
Cindy
was,
yes, okay.
Yeah. And Martha got married and is very successful when she does. But they were very hardworking, like all of us. Very dedicated to the women's movement, the Latina movement. They did everything in action. That was the other thing that spoke for us. We did everything very actively. The men tend to pontificate and talk about it, and we always tended to do something about it. And I think that spoke of everything we did. There was a product, there was a march, a fast, an article, something we did. We produced something. As we produced children, we always produced something from what we did. And Martha and Cindy were very active in fundraising and writing. Cindy tended to follow the arts and the Indian aspect, the cultural aspect of the movement. And matter of fact, when I went to China, we came back. We all had a duty or responsibility to come back and write about it and produce something. And Cindy and I put a production out through her technical knowledge of, it was a slide presentation, a written documentation with music as to the women's struggle in China.
Right.
And so Cindy was very instrumental in doing that.
She was a photographer.
So she did that for me, for the project I had to produce with Connie. And Cindy continued to be very involved with IJAS after I left. And so I don't know the extent of that. I mean, Anna and her were very close.
Mm-hmm.
But Cindy and I always maintained telephonic communication. We always... We just all spent time. Somehow it was one of those persons that you spend time with. And we also get back together. And she got involved with the construction industry at one time, was a construction worker, and got into a fight with a man. And, and she really got rough and tough. But she continued her struggle, you know, and left that. And I think as a result of... her getting cancer and then, you know, going really heavy into the meditation and Indian rituals and things of that nature. But
so she was working construction.
Mm-hmm. She worked construction for a period of time.
Right.
Can we stop for a while?
Yeah.
Is getting the materials for you,
mm-hmm.
so you can have that, you know, a resource to draw from. Yeah, I don't know how much you wanted to cover of the present. Or the more, you know, recent.
Right. It's important. I mean, it's good, and it's good to kind of get us from where we were talking from before to there. Because, I mean, maybe if we start from D.C., you went to D.C., you worked with the Commission on Human Rights, you came back, you finished your degree.
Mm-hmm.
You finished your degree in physical education and history.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah. And then what did you think from there?
You're really amazing.
You know what I mean? Because you didn't go teach PE.
No. Mm-mm. No, but I came to the realization I wanted a degree. And that's what I needed to have. You know, I'm one of those people who, like I said, have to bear fruit in some way. And I'm a big advocate of education. And I'm a big advocate of women that have degrees, actually flaunt them. I think it's very, very important. There's not enough of us.
I'll send you my graduation notification then when I'm
Dr.
doctor.
Blackwell.
Yeah.
You know, so... Then I went to law school, and my activities, you know, continue to be involved with the community, the Latino community. And I told you I also have a preference for multi-ethnic kinds of activities.
Yeah. You know why I was interested in those, the 70 years into the 70s into the 80s? It's just mapping where this moment, like different people's trajectories, and how, and I was interested in that multi-ethnic tendency, because remember we had talked about kind of a third world liberation, and that's maybe had where it started, but then from there where it went. And I was interested too that it wasn't just there a group of women within a very narrow movement, but that you've all kept making different links.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to Mexico City and then to China, making it international.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
'Cause do you think that was a personal thing about your own personal consciousness or interest or politics, or do you think it reflects the time in a way, or some events or processes that were happening at the time?
I think it reflects the time, really. And I shared with you that our interests or our issues were broader than, you know, city or county or within a certain geographic area. They were just more, they were broad, and they were actually universal, we thought. So I've always been interested in learning. I mean, I just feel that's where the power is for me as a person, as a woman, is knowledge. And so when the opportunity arose to go to China and then be able to look at it from a woman's struggle in a country where there was changes, significant material changes for women. You know, I couldn't see them. You know, I couldn't see them in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So China, I got to see them. You know, I got to see women working with heavy-duty equipment, like at, you know, San Pedro the docks. And mm-hmm. we went to China and saw women working there. We saw women in political positions. I mean, we saw what we talked about was going to happen here and had not happened. So mm-hmm. it gave me a visual reality.
Right.
So that was real important to for me. And then
did you see things that you didn't expect or didn't want? Mm-hmm.
No, I think the sad part was to see where they came from and where they were, and seeing it as a real possibility, where women were in bondage, I mean physical, where their feet were bound so they wouldn't be able to be as mobile. And you saw pictures and you saw proof of that with the older women, where their feet had been bound. And, I mean, to literally think this is how they're going to prevent, or they try to prevent women from becoming liberated, and then seeing women in China liberated in a much real extent. I mean, posters, you know, like we billboards here, billboards there are all about struggles mm-hmm. of the community, and you all saw women in those billboard. I mean, there was a real reality to the equalization of sexes in China. And you saw it in everything that was going on there. So it was really a wonderful experience for me to see it happening somewhere, that it was possible.
Right.
And then to constantly be involved, like, well, I also went to law school, I think I told you, after I went to China.
Mm-hmm.
I went to law school because I felt
It was linked to your decision to go to law school.
It helped me then go. Like, yeah, you know, I've got to get more education. I have to have more ammunition to deal with the issues that confront women. So, even more so. And matter of fact, I was working for Chicana Center before I went to China, or while I went to China, and we had dealt with some suits within the organization.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Well, they never went to court. They were settled. But I'm sure you heard, the split between the Chicana movement and the Comisión Femenil and the Chicana Service Action Center.
We talked about that a little.
Well, I was real involved with that split.
Right.
And it involved a legal action, and it never went to court or anything, or it never got filed, but we were threatened.
What was the legal action?
Well, Chicana Center was a program of a corporation called Comisión Femenil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But Chicana Center was doing all the work and subcontracting, you know, with the cities and the governments to do services for women. And Comisión came in, so to speak, said we weren't the legal entity that was authorized to do that, which, in fact, was true, legally.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, they were right on, correct about that. But Comisión was really a broader group, and it was more of a political group. Political in the sense of Democrat, Republican, political,
right.
Politics.
Right.
And we were interested in the betterment of women and enhancement services for women.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a real split in that political arena issue. So we just said, let's incorporate. You know, mm-hmm. to go by the rules, let's do that.
What does that mean, to incorporate?
You become a corporation in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
So Comisión was the Inc., the entity.
Mm-hmm.
Chicana Center was a project of the Inc.
Mm-hmm.
So we just became an Inc.
Mm-hmm.
We became an entity, a corporate entity, in the state of California's eyes, the legal eyes.
Right.
So that we could then bind the organization to get contracts. And what had happened is Comisión wanted to use Chicana Center, which was really well known as more liberated and more radical group of women. They wanted to use that because we were doing the work as a credibility for them to support a candidate, which was Richard Alatorre at the time, and Artores. And we weren't about that kind of politics. We were about community politics and women's politics. And we opposed it, and they were going to fire us because we didn't go along with it. So that's why we became incorporated. And we actually won. We got the contracts under our entity. And it continues to this day. But it was a real big, big split.
I'm sure they didn't want to give it up. Yeah.
I mean, we had meetings, and Anna was involved with this, because Anna was on the board. And Anna, I mean, we've almost physically gotten to some fights with these women, I mean, physically. I mean, it was that emotionally charged for us. And it was like a repeat or a revisiting of what happened to us as hijas, you know. Only it was women doing it to women.
Right.
For a man issue, or what we saw as a man issue,
mm-hmm.
or a political Democrat Republican issue.
Mm-hmm. So, but the center continued.
Yeah, and it still continues, and you know, it does a lot of good things for domestic violence and homeless, and so I mean, I think I shared with you the only reason I left Chicana Center is because Francisca really didn't see me going to law school and working there.
Right.
So I made a choice. And that, I think that brings us more currently to date. I mean, my involvement in pure women issues, really my issues have become more broader base with working with all entities.
Corey?
Yes? Sorry.
So we're catching up.
Yeah, we're kind of like jumping now ahead. And
broader based issues, you said.
Well, broader based alliances or working with groups. I, from Long Beach State, really working with the Black, the BSU, the Black Students Union, and Asian, and the SDS, and the Anglo groups that were on campus. You know, I really saw the power. I actually saw the power in that. And I think also that's why I moved more toward the movement, the women's thing, because I saw the women's movement broader than the Latino movement.
It could be multiracial.
Oh yeah, that it was. And pretty much that's my way of working, and whatever I do is I work with multiple groups and leverage the groups for the issues we confront. And they're really multi-ethnic, and they're usually more women. It's just a natural that the ones of us that get together are just women that are doing a lot of the work still, continues in that light. And then developing programs.
That's interesting, though, because out of that political moment, you know, that I was wondering, because you had mentioned this before about women, and I don't know if it's women of color or all women, you know, but bridging these different, seemingly very different groups for common agendas.
It's mostly women. Because mm-hmm. My reality is that's who's doing it. Mm-hmm. Who's taking care of the business, who's doing the groundwork, who's